Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 10K Collective, the place to be for six, seven, eight-figure Amazon sellers. And warm welcome back to Nadine Eich of Anydar in a rather warm Germany, I believe. How are you doing there, Nadine?
I'm melting.
Right. We're having crazily, this is being recorded in July. So if you listen to this in the depths of December, you can cast your mind back to the heat wave that smashed into Europe. So
yeah.
How hot is it actually where you are?
It's 39 degrees. I think it's like 100 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. It's pretty tough. I mean, I am armed with a spray bottle and a fan, so spraying myself.
Excellent. This is it's quite the image. Make sure your microphone's away from the water. I was just thinking. So it sounds like an ugly combination. So, and where are you? You're not somewhere like Madrid or somewhere exotic like that, are you? That normally gets very hot. Where are you based? Where are you coming from today?
I'm in the west of Germany, so close to Cologne. It's not normal to have that kind of heat. It's definitely very, I don't know, it's difficult because we don't have like the sea or anything. There's no wind. It's just sitting here.
Yep, it's similar in London if it makes you feel any better, which is quite strange, but we will soldier on. So in the British spirit, so we're going to talk about customer service basically, aren't we? That's one of your specialisms that you deal with. Just tell us a little bit about your company and Anydar, the things that they cover. Just remind us.
So I've been on this podcast before. Well, we've been on the podcast before, but what we do is basically have a customer service agency for Amazon sellers. And you can book us for especially Germany and, you know, English customer service all over the world. And we just take care of all of your customer emails and, you know, refund requests or replacement requests. And we just keep the customers, you know, happy so you can get on with your business.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward and very good thing too. And as to be said, I think it's one of the very first things that people traditionally outsource. And it's one of the things that you probably should outsource, because otherwise, if you want to have the sort of laptop lifestyle, particularly at the time of year when we're recording this in July, although it'll probably be autumn when people are listening, the idea of a laptop lifestyle is going to be spoiled if you have emails pinging into your inbox and you have to respond 10 or 15 times a day. So it's certainly going to be important to get it off your plate. So what would you say is the level of the sellers when they come to you? At what stage do people tend to turn to you?
Well, it's very versatile. I would say like some come over the very beginning because they feel like they're not doing, you know, a good job at customer service and they just want us to polish it and make it better so they can focus on growing their business. Other times their customers are pretty big and they realize that even if they did employ someone or they did have like a virtual assistant who took care of it, it is still a hassle because that person might get sick, they might go on holiday, and we just cover it all. So we're there like 365 days a year, 24/7, and we work on the weekends, on holidays, whenever, even on Christmas. So usually, you know, these kind of top sellers, they are there and they say, okay, I don't want to work on Christmas because my assistant is taking the day off, you know, and that's just basically the realm that we're working with here.
Yeah, and Christmas is not a casual day in retail, particularly, it seems, in Amazon sales. It's really, really concentrated around the Christmas period, actually. I don't know if you found the same, but I've seen that trend with the people in the masterminds who do big numbers.
Yeah.
That they find that it's not just about quarter four. It's not even just about December. It's about a sort of two-week period from Cyber Monday, I guess, or whatever other thing they've come up with, Black Friday, I forget what the all the other things are, through to Christmas Day. Is that something you found as well?
Yes, definitely. So the numbers usually go up from October until like January, and then, you know, the summer is a little bit lower. So usually we have sellers reach out to us in summer to set up for Christmas, you know, the end of the year, so they can really, you know, focus on other things. Because, you know, our girls, we're all girls here, we have this system in place that even if, you know, you say, okay, I have this major event at my family's and I want to take the day off, that's not a problem because someone else will cover. Like, that's our guarantee. We're always covering the service. And especially if you have maybe like a Filipino kind of or some kind of Asian person who's doing your English customer service and they have like a big family and big, you know, celebration stuff, it might cut into the customer service. They still do it, but, you know, there are other focuses during that holiday period time, you know?
That's true. And in the Philippines, there's the classic place to outsource where they generally have decent English. There's quite a lot of religious holidays that they take pretty seriously as well, being a very Catholic nation. So, yeah, that is something you've got to work around. And, yeah, you could force people to work through it, but you're not going to keep your staff very long if you don't treat them well. So, yeah, there is definitely a very good reason when you're outsourcing. This is a more general outsourcing point you've made, actually, which is that if you have a single point of weakness, that is a very bad thing for something as basic and as daily as customer service. Because if your person's sick or whatever on holiday, for example, I've got a VA who was sick 1 week and then it turns out, which he just let me know, he's getting married tomorrow, which is lovely for him. But like, okay, well, maybe you need a few days off then. Oh, yeah, I'd be really grateful for that. I'm like, well, you could have mentioned that 3 or 4 weeks ago when we started working together. He was too shy to mention it, and I didn't think to ask. Okay, like normal questions. Okay, great. What experience do you have? Are you getting married next week? I mean, it's not a normal question, right? So it's one of those silly things. I'm back doing a load of jobs, which I had thought I'd got off my plate. So it's a very, very valid point. And really speaking, yeah,
I have like nothing against that. You know, I also have like a definitely not. I mean, I have a VA from Manila, I think, yeah. And she's helping out a lot as well, but, you know, on other projects. And I really love her. But I have my girls and like all of my German girls. And especially, you know, when you're selling in Germany, you need someone who speaks the language and who doesn't just work off templates.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of like even like the second selling point, I would say, in what we do, because Germany is a big market in Amazon. You know, if you don't speak the language, it's you have a problem. Like, let's just put it that way, because Germans, we're not happy. Like, we're not happy if there are mistakes, like really crucial mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. So one question I would like to ask about is how much you can get away with. This is a bit like asking a turkey to vote for Christmas, but let's just shoot this one down. How much could you get away with using template emails and the famous Google Translate if you are doing customer service in Germany?
Okay, that really depends on the quality of your templates. So if you had like a German native speaker, like put it all down for you, translate all of your English templates, but also mind that the German customers have different questions than the English ones, so they have different issues. So you can't just translate all of your English templates into German and expect that they are going to, you know, ask the same questions. It's not happening. You know, what I find difficult with templates in general is that if you don't understand it and if you don't understand the question, you know, like the customer is easily getting fed up with this because they're just like, okay, you're not listening to me, you're not reading, you're not understanding what I'm saying, you're just drifting off my question, and you know, I'm just gonna leave a bad review because I wasn't taken care of. And that's very common, actually. That's an issue with the templates if you're not like super into detailed, very, very detailed templates. And with Google Translate, I would just say don't do it, because Google Translate in German just doesn't mix, in my opinion. It's just like, no.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, somebody who also speaks both languages, like the word order is completely different. So you would require quite a sophisticated translation service to really get the order right. And yeah, I mean, you can kind of, I've written listings in German. What I use Google Translate as a starting point just to get the raw German down. And it kind of makes sense, but it doesn't sound good. It does not sound like you know what you're talking about. But yes, I think this is another thing that you just pointed out. The consequence, you've always got to think about the business case for doing A, B, and C. And it's not just about saving time and effort. It's also about what's the downside potential. And the downside potential of negative reviews is pretty bad. And also in Germany, I think it's fair to say, and I'd be interested to take your take on this, but that it's hard to get reviews. People seem to leave fewer reviews. So if you get a negative review, I think it's going to count relatively harder and it's going to hit your listing harder than it would in Britain, let alone the USA. Has that been your experience as well?
I agree, because especially in Germany right now, we're having some changes that makes it even harder for the seller to reach out to the customer. So like before, we could reach out to them with like an invoice email and be like, okay, did everything go okay? So this is what we did. We sent out an email, said, this is your invoice. Did it arrive okay? And when people said, yep, everything's cool, we had like a point of contact that Amazon couldn't hate us for, you know, they couldn't ban us for, because we were just like, okay, that's great. You know, it arrived. So you like it? Like, if you like it, it would be awesome. You could leave a review. You know, it's gone. Like, we can't do that anymore because Amazon is changing their system. So the customer can download the invoice directly without getting like an email from the seller. When you have that kind of problem, these customer emails that appear now are even more important. So whenever someone reaches out with a problem, it's like a chance to get them to write a review. And the only way you can make that happen is to sort of create a relationship between that person, you know, and yourself. Because they're just like, okay, you have a problem? No worries. I'll take care of it. Here, this is the solution. What do you think of this? And you send them a new product, for instance. And a week later, you remind them, like you send another email saying, did everything go okay this time? Are you satisfied? And they go, oh yeah, that's really nice. Thank you. And, you know, because in Germany, that's not usual. You do not follow up in Germany. You're just like, okay, customer service is usually fed up with you. That's our basic sort of understanding of customer service. Because when you reach out and they reply to you and they fix it, it's probably like a done deal. You don't go back and talk to the person. And if you then make this kind of special step forward and ask the customer if everything's still okay, it makes an impression. And this impression, you know, is something we use to steer them into a way of making, like sending in a review or just placing it there.
Excellent. That makes a lot of sense. And I think the main thing to say is a couple of things. I mean, first of all, this is not new, but in the Amazon space, it's exaggerated, which is, first of all, that an annoyed customer is emotionally engaged. They're far more likely to leave a review negative, or if you get it right, positive, than somebody who just frankly just gets the product, goes, oh, that's nice, and doesn't do anything, which is most of us because we're busy, right? So it's an incredibly important opportunity. But the other thing to say is that although the problem we have with Amazon is that they are sellers, that they've created incredibly fussy consumers. And the Germans, with respect, were quite fussy to start with anyway, but more than the Brits in the US, I would say, in general. But also, they're still not necessarily buying highly expensive products. So you can find yourself resisting putting the time and energy and manpower in. But on the other hand, what we've got to recognize is the value of a customer to you, of somebody who will leave a positive or negative review, I reckon, in terms of marketing spend, is worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars or euros, because it's so hard to get a positive review. And if you get a negative review, it's going to cost you hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands now, to actually wipe that out with positive reviews. I really think we've got to think, this customer is not worth $20 widget with a $5 profit margin. They're probably worth $500 to not get a negative review, because it's going to smash your conversion rate. Always does. And I just think, if you think of the economics that way, suddenly it's worth spending, you know, an hour of your time or a VA's time or an agency's time on somebody that otherwise you would think is worth $5. I mean, have you had any responses on that sort of front from your clients that you work for, the sellers?
Yeah, well, definitely. And I would just like to say, if you are selling in the US right now and you're struggling to get reviews, because that happens a lot, you know, I just met up with someone. They have a big shop and there's a lot of problems with getting reviews, and they've started using you know, like a very simple follow-up email. And I think that's still, I'm not really sure about it right now, like at this time point in time, if this is allowed, and, you know, with Amazon, but they basically just sent an email saying, you know, is there anything, like, are you, did it arrive okay? That's basically what they asked. Like, it's a very short email. And they are getting reviews from that email because they engage. And that's a very simple, you know, way in the US to do it. And since that fell back, like fell away now, we have to get creative. And the one thing that we can do is just reach out to these unhappy customers, basically, because they are already writing, you know, they are already in touch. And usually you can turn the whole thing around and make it worth your time as well as their time. Because if I'm fed up with the company and they go and they make it all better, I'm very impressed because they got me out of that really deep kind of frustration and pulled me back and said, okay, I did everything to make this okay. Are you happy now? And you're just like, yeah, you know, now I'm happy. And usually, you know, when you have this person, let's say Adam is always writing to you and you say, okay, Adam is nice. You know, he's been helping me. And then he says it would take like 10 seconds to write a review. That would be super helpful. Could you do this for me? Of course I can do this for you, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Absolutely. I think in the end, here's my expectation, is that there are lots of, I mean, I work with VAs from the Philippines, and I've worked with some very intelligent, hardworking guys. I want to say this up front, but also it's not their native language, and you can end up with a situation, particularly with that Amazon guys. Again, it's not because of where they're based, it's because of the quality of training, I think, and the pay and all the rest. But it's enormously frustrating, as you said, to ask a precise question. Somebody answers a question that's similar but not the same. And likewise, I'm always get such a relief when I get a native speaker on the phone. They say, oh yeah, you need to do blah blah blah. They know the system backwards and they know exactly what to do. There's always a huge relief. So yeah, I think we're saying a lot of the same thing, but I just think it's got to be rammed home that this is just so critical that if you have a bad customer service experience, you basically, people talk about branding, you know, is branding in its most extreme degree. It's how you feel about a company, right? And the positioning in your individual mind. I just think,
and also, yeah,
it's critical.
Sorry, but you have to think about how our world is changing. You know, you have all these robots. Like if I see another, okay, I'm a robot, I can help you. I'm just like, you know what? No, I want to talk to a human because you probably can't help me, okay? Like, I know, like, it just frustrates me a lot. So we're kind of cutting all that. And we have native speakers who are trained to be extremely kind and very helpful. Like that's what they have to do. They have to be helpful. They have to be kind. And they just have to make the customer happy. And I think in our world, that's something very like a luxury. You know, usually you end up with a robot until you click and click and click and somehow you end up chatting to someone or calling someone who can help you.
Absolutely.
And that just,
yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And also, I think this, what you said, the luxury feeling, particularly online, but we were just on holiday in Italy for a week. And one of the differences between a really good, expensive restaurant and one which is cheaper is normally the quality of the service. It's just that people kind of make an experience. For example, there was one place we ate that had really nice food. It was pretty basic, it was pretty cheap, and the person was nice enough, but just really busy, so you didn't get a great feel. And another place we went to, they had lovely jazz pouring out, the person took time to chat to us, they were very efficient but also friendly. And I think that's where you put the price tag difference, is the overall experience. So we've talked enough about the importance of the experience. So how do we actually go about this? So how do you personally go around turning around negative customers, having talked about how critical it is? What are the actions that you take?
Okay, so the first line I would always, you know, want you to remember is kill them with kindness. So mirror their frustration, turn it into something that they can't possibly be mad at, you know? So if someone says, okay, this bed sheet, it, you know, ripped or something like that, you're just like, oh, I'm very, very sorry. You know, I'll just send out a new one. Also, like maybe you can have like an extra kind of a cheap product that you can just put into the order as well and send it over just to make like an impression, you know? But it's very important to sort of get them from that state of being frustrated and tell them, okay, you're not like, I'm not leaving you hanging. I'm helping you. I'm actually helping you. Because in my experience, you know, German customer service is pretty terrible. Let's just say that. Because usually you don't, no one helps you. So if I, as a customer, write like an angry email to customer service, I feel like they're not going to help. That's like my first kind of impression before I even get an email back. So when you do get an email back, it is really nice to hear that someone will help you. Okay, so you send out the replacement product, maybe like a smaller, funny kind of thing, you know, or like a note that you have in stock as well. I don't know. Some sellers do that. And just to, you know, impress the person. And a week later, you email them again and ask them if now everything's okay and to their liking. And when they respond, you can be like, oh, that's great. You know, like, I'm so happy everything worked out. And, you know, if you would mind, you know, sharing your experience with other customers, that would really help, you know, because we're trying to build up, you know, our brand and stuff like that. And I would also like to say that if you're selling a product that is, you know, seasonal, you should always sort of branch out into a tiny bit of small talk. Let's say you send out a swimming kind of what's it called when you're in the sea or something like that, and you're on this mat, like a swimming mat, or
I guess so. Yeah, I don't use them. Sort of inflatable swim raft, but yeah, something like
exactly.
That. Yeah,
yeah. One of our customers or clients, he always, you know, he sold them in summer, and our girl, she was always very talkative. Like, oh, you know, I hope that you find a beautiful spot to test this out, and let me know if this is, you know, exactly what you want, and these kind of things, just to make yourself more human, to make yourself more like a person. Because if you're the more a human you are, the more the other one will like you. You know, I even had discussions on restaurants in the area with one of my customers because he came from here and stuff like that. And they are very kind, and it just lessens all of the frustration and gets them even closer to that spot of leaving a review. Of course, that said, you just can't do that all the time when you're doing this yourself. So if you train someone to do this, you know, it's very important that they find balance of when do I go out there and maybe, you know, say something nicer than the customer would expect.
Excellent.
It's very high profile, I guess, these kind of things, because you can't just use templates all over the place for this. But that was always my expectation for myself when I did customer service, to find that little bit of information that I can relate to with this customer.
Yeah, that's a real art. I mean, I think that's going to be hard to train somebody who's a really low-level VA in that. You're going to have to understand the culture and understand that the culture of not just the language and culture in generally, but of a particular kind of niche. If most people are quite playful about summer stuff or whatever. I mean, if you're selling a medical device for some really serious thing, it's probably not good to be too playful. And, you know, that kind of sounds obvious,
no.
But it's the kind of thing that can go horribly wrong if you don't get the judgment right. So like anything else, it's just having a judgment. And as you say, it's that kind of luxury of having somebody really, really understand you, and actually, as opposed to not just a robot or somebody who's reading off a script, which is really important, or, you know, working off a script. By the way, so we're talking a lot about Germany. Obviously, that's your main expertise, I guess. Do you work in other marketplaces as well? You mentioned that you do English customer support as well.
Yeah, we do basically all of Europe, Canada, and the US. So when we work for, you know, customers who have French and Italy and Spanish, Italian, Spanish shops, and of course, you know, British shops, we always use English because we have quality assurance at our agency. That means that every week we have like a quality assurance kind of girl. She's going over the other ones and checks what they're doing. And I do that myself as well. And I do not speak, you know, Spanish and Italian and French. And I always want to, you know, make sure that the quality is very high. And so we decided not to branch out into these languages.
Yeah, interesting decision. I mean, I suppose it's sticking to one thing that you're good at. Besides which, I guess that the numbers speak for themselves. So the American market is obviously huge, but Germany is the next biggest by quite a long way. And then UK comes next. And then what about Japan? Do you deal with Japan? I guess that's quite a different question again. It's not Germany.
Not yet.
Is that something you're planning to see then? Sounds quite exciting.
I don't think so. I don't think so, actually. Yeah.
No. I mean, if you're going
to... Yeah, it's... you know, if another agency wants to take this over, be my guest. Yeah. Because, you know, it would take so much to get, like, people on board who are Japanese or Indian or Chinese to, you know, sort of get into this whole culture as well. Because I can't possibly do that as well.
Yeah, makes sense. And it's good to stick to what you're good at. So tell us a bit about German-specific copywriting then. So you talked about the kill them with kindness thing. What are the particular things, if people are handling this themselves to some degree, even if they've got a German speaker working with them, that's not enough to just speak German. What are the sorts of things that you should say, and what sort of things that you would say in the US, for example, would you need to avoid in Germany?
So first of all, there are two types of addressing a customer. There's Sie and Du, which sort of translates to you and, well, a higher form of you. And it's the difference between addressing someone casually and someone in a more professional kind of manner. Let's say you already brought up the medical kind of, you know, products. You cannot, in this case, you would never... duzen, which means like address someone very casually, like, hey, what's up, you know, that kind of voice. So you'd have to notch it, like put it up a little and have like a professional kind of tone in your email. And this is very difficult sometimes because there are sellers, you know, there are many sellers out there who sell highly professional products and then very casual products, you know, like cooking things, like really family kind of friendly products. And there you could potentially use more casual language. But this needs to be distinguished before you set up any kind of templates. You know, at Enida, we have all of these templates in these two forms, like professional and casual. And every time we, you know, accept a new client, we'll look over their shop and determine which voice we want to use here. There's also a voice between these two as well that you can, like a professional sort of casual way. I'm not going to get into that, but it's a little bit difficult, I guess. And so that's the very first thing you got to do.
Makes a lot of sense. And also you have that choice in French and I guess you have it in all the other European languages, don't you? French, Italian, Spanish. Certainly in France, again, it's part of the culture. I mean, I don't speak Spanish or Italian really. I mean, I speak extraordinarily terrible Italian, but I speak decent French. And that, again, that nuance between formality and informality is a really important part of continental European culture, which has kind of disappeared from Britain, unless you're dealing with the older generation, which is an interesting point, actually. People kind of assume that everything's the same. But of course, if you're dealing with somebody in their 60s, they probably want to be called Mr. or Mrs. somebody, actually, in my experience. Yeah. Whereas for everyone else in Britain, yeah, you just call them, you know, you and Mike. Hi, how you doing, Mike? And it's kind of the expectation now. Whereas, yeah, you can't avoid that question of whether you're being formal or informal in European languages. It's a very good point. I hadn't even thought of that, which is ridiculous, because I speak the language. But it just goes to show, when you're not in the culture, you just don't think about these things. All right, so that's a very basic thing. What are the things, but really critical, what other things would you need to look at if you're a US-based seller, which is true for a lot of people, and they want to expand into Germany, and a UK-based seller? And if you're a UK-based seller and you're not trying to out Germany, I think you're crazy, because it's a bigger market. The pound keeps dropping like a stone because we elect worse and worse politicians. And so, you know, the euro is getting more and more valuable. So there's even more reason now to sell into Germany. Goodness knows what happens in October, but we'll see about that. So if you're American or English and you're selling into Germany and you've got your copywriting and you get somebody to translate it with Z and Du, and you've thought about that, what are the other things that you would need to adjust in your marketing emails if you're using them, or in your customer service?
That's sort of difficult to just say that in general, I guess. But it's like, if you set up templates, let's say you were to set up templates because you don't want to, you know, employ German speaking customer service, which is fine, you know. You would just have to make sure that you have different versions, like a lot of different versions, especially if you're replying to customers like openly, like on the listing to negative reviews, for example. And that's very difficult because there are a lot of sellers who just copy and paste the same comment if they comment on negative reviews. And I always say that it's very important, crucial even, to reply to negative reviews, in my opinion, because the customer might not reach out to you, but the other customers see when they browse the negative reviews, and we all do, okay, that people you know, that the customer service of this seller is taking care of them. And if it's only the same email, like comment all over again, you know, that's kind of sketchy, I guess. I don't know. So we always make sure to have like 3 or 4 versions in this separate tone that we can address the customer with when it's like in the public. But when you're going into a sort of non-public customer service, it doesn't matter. You know, you can always have the same email and just adjust it a little bit. But I guess, yeah, that's one thing I would recommend. Is there anything else you thought of, Michael?
I guess there's just a bit of a difference in the sort of selling and buying culture there, isn't there? Because I know that in America, you have to kind of shout even to British ears a bit insanely on the listing, which is more about the listing kind of thing. So I mean, there's a lot of follow-up emails I received from American sellers or that I've seen that say things like, hey, you're super awesome, we love you, you rock. And to a Brit, like, get off. It's like somebody you just met kind of putting their hands all over you. It's a little bit kind of icky. So presumably Germans don't like that.
No, we don't do that.
Tell me a bit more about that if you're trying to send follow-up emails.
So if you decided to do that, first of all, in Germany, you know, it's not allowed because we have the whole GD, you know, what was it?
GDPR. That's it. I don't even know what it stands for.
Yeah, exactly.
That one. Yes.
Yeah, that basically protects the, you know, privacy of a person. So if you send them an email without being prompted, and that is exactly what you're doing when you're sending out follow-up emails in Germany, you can get into big trouble. You know, you can even get into trouble if you just send them an invoice email and ask them for a review. That's also trouble. So you really have to educate yourself on, you know, what's allowed and what isn't. Usually nothing is allowed. Like you're not even allowed to send out an invoice email anymore asking for anything. So, but there are sellers who just like, you know what, I'm just going to do it, right? Sorry for my language, but I'm just going to do this and I'm going to send out 2 follow-up emails or 3. And if you do, you know, always be careful to sound as casual as possible. Always, always address the customer's name. But it really depends here on the formality of your product. So you can't say, if you have like a medical product, you can't say, hey, Mike, you know, don't do this. You know, you have to use the last name to sound more professional. And that also brings another issue because you have to separate between female and male. You know, you can't say like, hey, Miss/Mister. That's like, I'm not going to read this email, you know, not going to happen. So it has to be, if you do this, it has to be very altered to your customer base. And then Germans are usually, we're not a fan of being pushed. We're not a fan of being like complimented a lot because it sounds so fake. This is why it's very like, it's a hard balance to keep in customer service to make the customer like you, because you have to seem real.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of nuanced, really. Yeah, for a German to be really excessively nice, it's always a bit suspicious. It's not really part of the culture to do that all the time. And in Britain, it's a bit of a blend between American and European culture, really, in a lot of ways. But yeah, you still have to be a little bit different from America, ideally. I guess we're used to the idea that everyone online is kind of Americanized, but it's not ideal. But as you said, GDPR is something we should be very careful of. And I'm basically a lot of, like a lot of things in this country that have come from the European Union, it's kind of got a German flavor to it. So I guess that in the UK, we're now subject to that. And I guess that might be reason, that would be a very strange reason for Brexit. But even if that happens, I suspect that it's now written into UK law. So I don't see that changing. And in fact, if you're American listening to this, then there are a lot of moves in America to do very similar legislation for similar reasons, because the consumer is getting fed up. So you're going to have to get good at this stuff, my friends, if you're not good at it yet, because it's coming your way. Let's just deal with one more question and then we'll wrap up on customer service. Interesting to explore in detail there. It is a lot of nuances, a lot of sort of thing that you need to really think through.
Yeah.
It just strikes me in this conversation that there's lots of things which seem like fussy details, but because you're dealing with the actual customer, they have so much power in Amazon. it is worth just agonizing over these details because they do make it a financial difference in my experience. It's just how it is. So tell us about returns and exchanges. How do you deal with those guys? Because that's obviously one of the classic kind of potentially nuclear situations we deal with.
Okay, so usually we have, like sometimes we have customer clients who set up an email that is being sent out to the customer who returned, you know, product, asking if there's anything they can improve on the product or the experience, or if they, you know, if they could share what bothered them. Well, when these people do reply, you'd also have a chance to turn this thing around. But also, you know, what I find very important, and a lot of sellers just ignore that, is the whole communication with the customer is so, so important to improve your product so it doesn't happen again. So if you have, again, a bed sheet with a printing error and you want to know about it so you can fix it, you know, with the company, you know, in China, and the whole, you know, it's so important to keep in touch with the customer and not just outsource it and never think about it again, because this is how you are going to avoid returns and avoid all of this hassle of, you know, Amazon being like, okay, we're going to destroy your inventory now because, you know, these returns can't be sent out to the customer anymore. This is, you know, something that you should be aware of. And also you should, if you have like a virtual assistant, you should ask them to make you like a highlight report, which we do on a regular basis. Like every week we do that at Anita, a highlight report of things that the customer service noticed. So, okay, there's this issue with the strap of the backpack. There's this issue with the material. It tears really easy. And these are things that can be addressed when, you know, the product's being reproduced, like the next time you order it, and then you just have less errors in your whole production.
Yeah, that's really important. Again, I mean, it's again valuing the customer feedback for what it is, which is absolutely critical. And yeah, it's in a much more imaginative and interesting way of dealing with things, really. I mean, if you just treat it as a pain that needs to be dealt with as quickly as possible, I completely understand where you're coming from. That's how you feel. But unfortunately, it's not. Yeah, it's critical contact, which is actually quite precious, because if things are going out there that people haven't caught the problem or haven't told you, you can't correct it. And what you don't know about is actually the thing that worries me. If they've got a problem that somebody's actually had the courtesy to get in touch with you, you should really treat it as an opportunity. And that's really hard to do because nobody really wants problems and complaints. But I think that's really the thing that we've got to do, right? And the best people that I know in this space actively seek out, before they even get a product live, they actively seek out customer interactions, probably for free, with their products to start off with. And then they iterate until the products are good enough for people to say, yeah, really, most of their sort of user testers, if you like, are really happy. This is like the other end of the scale, isn't it? But it's still about refining the product and refining the product all the time. And
yeah, definitely. But you know, a lot of people, they look down on customer service, and it's just annoying to them. And I understand where they're coming from. But very early on in my journey, you know, I've been doing this for 3 years now, I realized that, you know, what really keeps your business going is customers. And if you don't treat them well, they're going to leave you. It's the same as, you know, with your employees. If you treat them badly, they're going to go and go somewhere else, take their business somewhere else. And this is why you need to cherish this kind of contact, even if you're just like, oh my God, this person is so annoying. You know, kill them with kindness. Be, you know, very nice. And even if they get you so frustrated that you can't even reply, get someone else to draft a reply for you and then go over it with a cool head and reply. And especially if you already have a customer service in place, please, please ask them to send you a detailed report of the issues they come up with, like they come across during the week, so you can get ahead of the problem.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think any kind of reports in any area, when it's probably something that we need to be more consistent with. I mean, I suppose I haven't got my VAs doing that kind of stuff yet. I'm a bit wary of that if they don't know what they're doing. But yeah, I think anything that touches the customer on Amazon or any similar, Amazon's led the charge, but then most platforms are now very review-led. they have so much power. They have life and death power, really, over the conversion rates and thus the economics and thus the viability of our listings and our products. So we have to respect that. But also, as you say, you have to embrace it as a precious thing, especially in a world where under GDPR, you're not technically, although a lot of us do it, but you aren't technically allowed to contact anyone ever, really, without permission. So once they've got a problem, you have a very clear reason that you not only can contact them, but you actually should from the point of view of customer service. It actually is, as you said, it's a rare opportunity that we've got to embrace. And also, if you're really serious about this in the long-term view of it, developing a product and making it better than everyone else is the only way you're going to do that is to make it better from the consumer's point of view, right? So this is really, in a way, you've got to flip it through 180 degrees and see it's very positive. And the last thing I want to say is just to pick up on what you just said. All of that being true, I personally get really annoyed with customer service. I find it hard to keep calm I write very groveling emails, which is a very English thing. We're good at groveling. I'm so sorry. Oh God, I'm going to kill myself and my children. You know, it's a very British thing. But on the other hand, there is a residual annoyance, which if you're not careful will come across. So in the end, it just kind of starts eating at you. So I really think from the point of view of your psychological health sometimes, but also for just make sure that killing somebody with kindness, if it's your money at stake, is hard to do. This is a case where I think a third party, somebody who's not got any money in the fight, is much better placed to do the job than you, right? I just think I personally know the importance of customer service, but I really don't like it. So I get very p***y with people very quickly. Oh God, I've just put another thing I'll have to get rid of some more rude words here, but yeah, it's you know what, it's just how it is. It's you got to be real about this stuff, right? And a lot of the time, I think you'll find, just to flip the outsourcing thing on its head that we're talking about, when you outsource stuff, we all have a fear it's not going to be done as well as we'd have done it. This is an area where you're much likely to get a better quality result from giving it to an agency who specializes in this stuff. So thank you so much. Well, I think I've done your pitch for you. Is there any, how do people get in touch with you if they want to explore what you do and explore working with you?
You can just go to our website and, you know, www.inida.de. And I think this should also be in the show notes. And then you can look at our prices and our services and you can apply to working with us. And then you will be sent, you know, an overview of, you know, the services and all the prices, you know, in detail. And after you've reviewed that and you're happy with this and you looked at our FAQ for any questions that you might have, we can set up, you know, a phone call.
Sounds extremely straightforward. Well, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs. As I'm always tempted to say, if you haven't got it in Germany, Desert Island Discs has been around for about 60 years and they get sort of famous celebrities on and ask about their 7 favorite records. So anyway, thank you for coming on and talking about customer service. And we'll be talking about your experience from running an agency in the next episode, which I'm looking forward to. A very interesting topic. So thanks very much, Nadine.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.